welcome to another episode of Conversations with Authors podcast. I'm your host, Alison Thompson, aka The Proof Fairy, and in each episode of this podcast, I get to talk to an author about what inspired them to start writing and what tips they have for other aspiring authors. My guest today is Jim James. Having grown up in Europe, Africa, and America, Jim started his first company in Singapore at the age of 28, and he has since opened offices in China, India, and the UK. He's now back living in the UK, where he hosts The Unnoticed Show, a public relations podcast for entrepreneurs. From the interviews he conducts for his podcast, he found the content for his first book, The Unnoticed Entrepreneur. Hello, Jim. Thank you for being on the podcast today. It's really lovely to meet you.
Alison, thank you so much for welcoming me into your home in Portugal.
You're very welcome. Very welcome. So tell me about your book, The Unnoticed Entrepreneur.
So The Unnoticed Entrepreneur is a curated book of 50 interviews with experts for entrepreneurs on how to get noticed using technology. It's like a masterclass with 50 experts all consolidated and distilled into one book.
Okay. So what sort of areas do they cover? What sort of tech aspects?
Yeah, so what I do is I created this scheme called Speak PR. So Storify, Personalize, Engage, Amplify, and To Know. It's like a five-stage methodology for business owners to implement public relations. So each different stage has its own technology. So Storify, for example, how to make stories and so on. But the underlying theme really is the use of technology for content creation, content amplification, and for measurement. And that is some traditional tech, but also some of this new AI-enabled technology as well.
Oh, okay, that sounds quite intriguing. I don't know a great deal about AI, so especially not in terms of promoting yourself as a promotional tool. That sounds interesting.
Yeah, AI and this whole sort of GPT-3 platform, and some people are developing their own proprietary technologies as well, is really a great enabler for business owners. So, it's really helping for people that are stuck, for example, with how to start writing or drawing or creating video, for example. There are some tools out there like AI Writer, for example. There's one called Pepper Write for creating text. And you could type in a couple of keywords and it will give you, for example, an article, or it'll give you a blog post, or give you a link. So it can help you get started. And for many entrepreneurs, they didn't start the business because they were marketeers, right? They had a great business idea. And then at some stage, they need to go beyond themselves and their own personal network to build the business, but don't necessarily have the budget to engage a consultancy. Or they've tried a consultancy and they found the consultant didn't really understand the business enough and the budget wasn't enough and so on. So you get into a vicious cycle. So these tools really are wonderful, enabling business owners of any size to get started and create content.
Okay, yeah, it sounds really interesting. So what inspired you to write the book? I guess this is something you must do in your business life.
Yeah, so I have a public relations company, Alison, that I started in Singapore in 1995 and then opened in China in 2006 by moving to Beijing, and then also opened in India as well and moved back to England in 2019. And when I came back to England, actually, it was my sister, Alison, who kind of prompted me to do this because she has wonderful ideas and can really help people with the impact of light on children and on well-being. And so talking with her name, Shelley, Dr. Shelley James, she was really in a loop. She didn't know how to market that, how to position herself and so on. And I thought, well, I do this for big companies. I do it for telcos, for example. I do it for car companies in Asia. But what people like Shelley need is bite-sized pieces of information that they can and do one at a time and do themselves. And so I started the podcast. So I have a podcast called The Unnoticed Entrepreneur. And in 20-minute sound bites, giving advice, really. And then I started to interview experts. And once I had 100 interviews, I thought, you know what, I could just curate this into the first 50 episodes into a book. Because what I do is after each episode, I make an article.
Right. Yeah.
So I do the podcast and then the article, which goes onto my Medium and my LinkedIn and my newsletter. So curating the book really was the next step.
Okay. Yeah. It's something I've often thought of doing with this podcast, actually, that, I used to back when I started this back in 2014, I used to transcribe all the interviews and then have them on my website as a written interview as well. And I often thought, yeah, there's so much good content in here. It needs a lot of editing, but yeah, I could definitely.
Yeah. And I think, Alison, this is really a great way for anybody that's thinking about writing a book that isn't sure about, you know, if they've got enough to say. So with 50, 20-minute interviews, I've got an 80,000-word, 350-page book.
Gosh.
Because each 20 minutes is about 900 to 1,400 words, depending on how quickly people speak. Mm-hmm. So you cut that down to 1,000 words. And then, you know, with your top and tail and section headers and so on, actually, over a period of 3 months, I was able to curate a book. And actually, we've got volume two now is already being laid out.
Okay.
For the second tranche of interviews. So for the listeners out there that are interested, that are struggling with, well, what could they say on their own? Actually, for a first book, interview people and curate what other people say. But as long as you think of the theme, what I've done is to create the narrative of Speak PR so that it's not just a loose sort of collection of essays. There's a focus and there's a structure for the reader. And then what I've done is to include all the contact details of all the people that I've interviewed. So LinkedIn details, email, and so on. So it becomes a directory for the reader of 50 experts that on their own, they may not be able to meet, but in one book, it's a masterclass with 50 contact details.
Yeah. And everyone wins, don't they? So you get the you're the author, so you get the raised profile from that. Everyone who's contributed through podcast interviews has all their details in, so they get that increased profile as well. And of course, the reader is benefiting from all their advice. So everyone's a winner.
Yeah, roll up. Everyone's a winner. And I have had people say that they've got calls from people that have heard the podcast and have read the book. And I've interviewed people from Australia to do with, you know, listening, a listening expert from Australia. I've had writing coaches from America. I've had people from Africa that have started businesses and in AI. So it's a global reach, I guess, reflects the kind of work life that I have. But everyone's a winner. And I think that's the nice thing about being self-published is that, you know, you don't have to necessarily have the traditional fulfill the publisher's financial model. You can build it in a different way.
Yeah. I'm going to talk to you about publishing in a bit. But before we get to that, you said you turn your podcast interviews into an article.
Yes.
What sort of technology do you use to do that? Are you feeding the audio into some sort of transcription thing?
So what I was using was Otter.ai.
Yeah.
Which is really good and I found to be better value than, there's another one called Rev, but Rev does it sort of by minute, whereas Otter, you have a monthly subscription, so it's better.
Yeah.
And now I use a platform that you might be interested in called Descript.
Okay.
Have you heard of Descript?
I've not heard of that. No, Otter I've recommended to authors as being a good tool to, if they want to
Otter's
dictate
great.
Their book, then yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So you can upload the audio, obviously, to Otter and get down a transcript. With Descript, which is a platform that enables you to import the audio and the video if you want to, and it transcribes the audio you as you see it. And then this is the cool part. You can edit the text and it edits the audio in real time for you.
No, really?
Yeah. It's one of those ones where when you watch the video, and I'll send you a link. I'm an affiliate of this, but I'm an affiliate just because I just love it. And when you watch the adverts and you see people's faces going, oh. when I used it, I went, oh, can it really be doing all this?
Gosh.
And then it automatically loads, you know, you can, has an API to send it to Buzzsprout, for example, where I host mine. So on the if you like, the production side. That's what I do. I use Descript. So I'll now I use Riverside, because the audio from riverside.fm is recorded locally. So I know if you're recording on Zoom, you can record as two tracks.
Right? Yeah.
If you record on your computer.
Yeah,
but if you record to the cloud, you only get the one track, which makes editing completely a nightmare. Mm. Riverside.fm also has a three version, depending on how much time you want to record per month. And that records the audio and video at source and uploads both of those, which is a little bit different to what Zoom does. And so you get much higher quality. The reason that's important is because when you do the transcription, if you have higher quality audio, you get better quality transcriptions.
Yeah, right? Especially if people mumble a little bit, then it's...
Yeah, that's right. Whereas the audio drops out a little bit on Zoom, I was finding I was losing often the guest on the transcript. So then what I do is I then have a VA in the Philippines. I give them access to Descript. They then go in and they export from Descript the transcript. Mm-hmm. And then they write it up as an article.
Okay.
And then shall I just share with you the rest of the chain?
I'm fascinated. Yeah.
Yeah. So then what we do is Alex is her name. Alex, we have a writer called Emmy, and also in the Philippines. And then what they do is Emmy finishes writing it, and her part time is with me. But then she writes for a radio station in the Philippines. Mm-hmm. So that article then goes on to my LinkedIn, my Twitter, my Medium, and so on. And then we put it into a platform called Dabble Writer. Have you heard of Dabble Writer?
I haven't. I'm writing all these down. Yeah.
Platform. As you can tell, my podcast is about the intersection of technology and communications and business, right? Because I think technology is such an enabler. So Dabble Writer for $9 a month, it's a subscription, and you can write and put your content into the browser. But it's much better than Google Docs because it has some of the authoring tools of Ulysses, the writing and Scrivener. Those are great, but they're almost too much for people like me, right? Yeah. There's so many.
I have Scrivener. Wrote my novel in Scrivener, and I haven't touched most of it. Yeah, just too much in there.
On the 80-20 rule, you use like 20%. So what I use Dabbleride, which is quite a new platform, because then what happens is that Emmy and Alex and I can collaborate on the manuscript in the cloud.
Right.
But unlike Google Docs, which is kind of not really built for long-form document management, this you can leave chapter notes, you can leave comments, you can move chapters around so quick and so easy. And then we export that file to another platform to create the index. And then that goes through Upwork to some people in the Ukraine to do the layout. I mean, hopefully they're still okay in the Ukraine.
Yes, gosh, I hope so, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. But so as a workflow, I literally sit in the garden shed. I renovated this during lockdown so that the kids could have my room in the house. Mm-hmm. And so I put power in it. So from a garden shed, we've been able to use the technology really and freelancers to create a book that really only cost us a couple of thousand dollars to make by really using the workflow and the VAs using technology. So, you know, my book itself is a credit to the guests that I've had on the show. But for your listeners, maybe the workflow and the technology that enables you to leverage English speaking $5 an hour editors and copywriters may be something that may add value for them.
Yeah, definitely. I actually used to have a VA in the Philippines some years ago, Julie, and it worked out very well. So,
it was very good. So anyway, that's useful, Alison, as a sort of a workflow that it can be enabled. And take some of the burden away, especially if you're writing the first book. It seems like so many things, so many pages and so on. So you can outsource and use technology to make your life a lot easier.
Isn't it incredible what the internet gives us? So you sit there in your garden shed in Somerset in the UK, talking to people all over the world, interviewing them for your podcast, sending, collaborating with people in the Philippines, collaborating with people in the Ukraine, publishing the book, which then goes out all over the world, and then people, and that's all done through the internet. So,
and there's the book designed on Canva, right? And I've now got a I've got a publisher in India now for the book. So they're making a version of that in India. And then we're doing print on demand. Do you know Printful, for example?
So I've
created merchandise for the book, hats, cups, and so on.
Using
Printful. And the benefit of Printful, and there are a few of these now, is that you can create the merchandise, but you don't have to make any until someone buys it.
Right. Yes. You just have them. You can put your design on their preset items, and then they sit there. They're printed. But you can have them in your shop. So it essentially comes from you.
So, and that connects to Etsy. So it means if you're an author and you want to build a brand around what you do, you can create a whole set of merchandise just for the cost of the design. And it's sitting there as and when someone wants to buy it.
Yeah, and presumably you could go off to Upwork or Fiverr or somewhere and get the design done for not a lot of money as well. If designers,
we use Canva, and then that's right. And then Alex in the Philippines, you know, takes the designs from the book cover, and then we reapply that to cups and
adapts it
hats
to the side. Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah, so it's there's never been a better time to be, if you like, an entrepreneurial author. Is an entrepreneur author and an author as an entrepreneur? I'm not sure which way around it is. But,
I think it's a bit of both, isn't it? I think you have to be an entrepreneur to be a successful author anyway, because you have to be, even if you're traditionally published, you have to be marketing your own book. So you have to be quite entrepreneurial. So you said before yours is self-published. So which publishing platform did you use? How did you go about that?
Yeah, so actually I did engage here a consultant to help me get the first book published online, because there are a lot of different things to do there, and that was a worthwhile investment, although I think that with a bit more time it's not impossible to do. But so we publish on the Kindle platform, but also on the Ingram Spark platform, the lion's share of the sales have come from Kindle. I think it'd be fair to say Ingram Spark is nice. But what we've also found is, from a promotional point of view, you know, you end up putting one URL, right? So we made it available in softback. I didn't do a hardback. But we did a softback, and then we've done a Kindle version. Yeah. Although in my Singapore office, we've been translating into Chinese. And my team there sent the PDF to China and have got hardback copies of the book.
For
next to nothing, by finding a printer on Taobao,
right?
£5 a copy. So I think if you're starting out, just going for Kindle, honestly, because you know, it does the job.
It does. I mean, you know, Amazon is the world's biggest bookshop. Love them or love it or hate it, it is the world's biggest bookshop. They do have their expanded distribution thing now, don't they? So there is an option to potentially have it in other places. I've worked with both. I find Amazon, I don't know how you found it, but I found Amazon KDP Print really straightforward, actually. As long as everything goes well, it's really straightforward. Ingram is a bit of a minefield. It's a bit of a trickier website and process to negotiate, I think.
Yeah, and I think that in reality, you know, again, on the 80-20 rule, you need one distribution platform, right? And then do you need multiples? For someone who's an unknown author like me, you know, you've got to work so hard to move up the charts anyway that you might as well invest all your time on becoming rated on Amazon. Or I guess rated on Ingram, one or the other. But it takes time, because you've got to send people links and say, you know, would you do this? And then I've created the Amazon author page.
Yes. Yeah, the Author Central.
And then Author Central. Thanks for reminding me what it's got. And then,
that's right.
And then I linked my RSS feeds to that. I don't know how many people do that. But, yeah, so what you can do, for example, is you can set up your Author Central And then you can, you know, and RSS just stands for really simple syndication, right? So all you do is you take your blog address, for example, normally just put RSS in front of that, and you can put that into your Author Central.
Right,
and
yeah.
I do the same for my podcast. So my Author Central then has my Twitter and everything going into that One Hero platform. So if you're going to do that on Kindle, you need to do that again on Ingram Spark because they've got an author. And for most of us, you know, unless I get a publicist, I might as well spend my time doing online promotions with podcasts and articles and stuff like that.
It's a lot of effort, I think, using Ingram Spark as well for not that much return. Really, okay, your book is available, is more widely available. But if you say, you know, if someone says, where do I get your book? And you say Amazon, most people are going to go and buy it from Amazon, aren't they?
Yeah, I think so. So especially at my stage, Alison, you know, if I become a Dan Brown or someone and where you get an incremental 100,000 books on Ingram Spark, it's probably worth it. But, you know,
we can but dream.
Yeah, we can but dream. And I'm also happy from an accounting point of view not to have another, you know, I've now got payments coming in that are not a lot from multiple merchants. Practically, that's another thing to manage, right? It's much easier to get one statement from one vendor that goes into my software for my accountants to figure out where the money's come from.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. No, I mean, I've always been very happy with Amazon, and the times that I've used Ingram is normally for a client who wants to be on there, and I don't like it very much. I just find it not very intuitive at all. And they don't seem to get anything from it. Yeah, they just don't seem to get the sales from there to justify it.
No.
So your book came out in September 2021. What's happened since it's come out? How has it been doing, and has it led on to anything?
Yeah, I think, well, first of all, we are now, I say we, you know, the book and myself and the contributors, we're a finalist in the UK Business Books Awards.
Wow, congratulations.
Yeah, so that was kind of nice. So I, you know, I was thinking that if I didn't enter any awards, I couldn't lose. You know, the old, that I could say I might have been a winner, but I never entered, that old line. But I thought I would bite the bullet, and I paid my entrance fee and sent off four copies. To be honest, I had no expectation that it would be a finalist. Anyway, so the book is a finalist, which is wonderful, and so I may well find out. But even then is nice. The second book is already in layout, because I've got my second group of 50. Yeah. I now have a publisher in India for it. We're getting some good reviews. And, you know, I haven't been able to upgrade from the shed yet, Alison, to be honest.
It looks like a very nice shed, I have to say.
Yes, it's very cozy because I put the heating in. So I can't say I'm retiring from the day job. But what of course, we all know is that one is you get the opportunity to have interesting conversations with people that lead somewhere. And secondly, from a sort of a currency point of view, when you say, you know, you have a book and a podcast, it's just one extra piece in the authority puzzle, isn't it, really?
Definitely, definitely. It's amazing the difference that there is between, you know, I'm an accountant who's written a book. I'm an accountant who does a podcast. I'm an accountant who has a video cast, you know. It just raises you. In some ways, it's quite sad. I think you could be a really poor whatever and write a book, and suddenly you're seen as an expert. And you might not actually be that. It's quite dangerous in some ways, but it does give you that expert cachet, doesn't it? It really does.
I think so. And I think, though, as well, the truth of the matter is that, you know, I wrote this book because I love the conversations I have with the experts and the entrepreneurs that I spoke to. And I really believed and still believe that what they're sharing should be heard by more people, you know. So the authority and so on is nice, but in a way it's only reflected because the authorities really are the people I've interviewed. And so I think that as an author or a curator, I've called myself a curator in this particular case, the real reward is I'm connecting really smart and interesting people with people that will really benefit from it, and that ultimately is the reward. And I think that if you have that in mind, that whatever your purpose of writing the book is, and for me, like my sister has read this, and there are people like my sister out there, that for me is really the reward. And the other the other aspects are the byproduct. But I think the other thing that happens is that one doesn't know where it's going to lead to. So, you know, now I get people coming onto the podcast that have heard of the book and the podcast that I never would have dreamt of even knowing, you know.
Yeah.
So it sort of becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. You put out interesting information and more interesting information comes to you. It's an amazing dynamic, right?
No, definitely.
It's very enriching.
Yeah, it is. And like you said, being invited onto things. My first book was about raising a child with ADHD. And I literally wrote it because I wanted to write a book. And it was like, what do I know about? Oh, I know about that. Let's write a book about that. And I sent it to an ADHD charity just before it came out to see if they would do a little review to go on the back cover. And they came back to me and said, yeah, we'd love to do a review. And we'd like to sell your book from our store. And we'd like you to come and speak at our inaugural conference. And I was like, whoa, hang on a minute. And suddenly I was thrown into this world of becoming an ADHD expert and speaking at conferences and events. And
that's
kind of backed away from it after a while because I realized it wasn't really what I wanted to be doing. But you know, I could have become, I'm 99% sure that I could have become one of the leading ADHD experts in the country if I carried on that trajectory. And that was all just because I thought, you know, I've always wanted to write a book. Right, let's write it about this. So there wasn't even any intention there. If you set your intention that you'd like to become well-known within your field, then, the world, the sky's the limit, really. And the book is the starting, can be the launch pad for that. It's always amazing.
So was it a case that you actually had ADHD about writing the ADHD book? Did you have a case?
Maybe I'm not diagnosed.
Is that a
symptom? I do wonder about myself sometimes.
Sorry, I couldn't resist that one.
Yeah. Not a problem.
I wrote a book about attention deficit disorder, and you know, I couldn't stay focused.
Yeah.
So
something like that. Yeah. I did do my usual thing. I wrote the first half of it, and then I thought, well, I've done half of it now. You know, let's move on to the next thing. So it took some persuasion to get back and finish it. So, Jim, what sort of advice would you have for other prospective authors, maybe people with a business who could kind of see a niche for a book in there?
I think that one of the first aspects is to set a goal that you believe is achievable for yourself. So what I mean by that is writing a book is, you know, completely open-ended, right? It could be infinite, could be, you know, War and Peace, it could be Ulysses. So it could be 1,000 pages, it could be a page. I think one of the key decisions that I took was to limit the scope of the book and to make it something that I knew I could achieve. And I think that what many people do is they set off writing a book, a bit like sort of setting off on a journey without really having a destination and knowing how many miles you're going to cover and how many miles you're going to drive a day. Or if you liken this to a marathon, for example, setting some targets that are within your comfort zone is, I think, a really good first step.
Yeah.
The second is to see the book as the first of many, not the only book. So when I wrote mine, you know, I wrote it in 3 months. And people said, well, how can you do it so quickly? So because on the 80-20 rule, it needs to be published. And it won't be perfect. There'll be problems with it and so on. And of course, we got rid of typos and silly things. But it was important to get it produced because that gives you the self-confidence and gives you the belief you can do another one. And so a bit like when, you know, I ran a marathon, but I didn't try and run a sub 4-hour marathon first time, right? You run a couple of marathons and then I set a sub 4-hour marathon for myself, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
See it as part of a process. And so often people think of do a chapter at a time. I'd say, well, think of it as a book at a time. But if you say it's only going to be 180 pages and that's on average 500 words a page, it's only 30,000 words.
Yeah.
If that's comfortable for you, write that down somewhere and keep yourself to that discipline. Because
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of people say that they're still writing the book And they started before I did, and they're still writing now. And they say, I can't finish. And the problem is they never really defined when the finish line is.
Yeah, yeah.
So I would say if there's one piece of advice, it would be define what the finish line is and give yourself a break. Because if you don't decide what the finish line is going to be, you'll keep running.
Yeah. No, that's really good. Yeah. It's always, I think planning is, some people can get away without planning at all. But I think, especially for a first time author, I think having a plan is really important. Knowing where you're going, knowing what you want out of it. But yeah, like you said, knowing where the finish line is, knowing where the end point is. This is what I'm going to put in this book. And that's the end of it. Because you can always do book two, book three, book four.
Yeah.
But you try and cram it all into one book. And the chances are it'll either end up not being a very good book because it's rambling or too long, or you just won't finish it and you won't get it out there. Yeah.
And I'm sure you tell people, Alison, but you must remember who you're writing it for.
Yeah.
And, you know, too many people write a book for themselves. Mm-hmm. And that becomes part of the problem, because actually, you know, your own emotional journey changes as you're writing the book.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things, I'm very focused on who I was writing the book for.
Yeah.
And so if it didn't fit the requirements of what I thought, someone who's running a business and needs to go to the next level, and, you know, and I have that as an avatar, and I know sort of their academic level, and I know what sort of time they're going to have to read every day and so on. If it didn't conform to that, I stopped doing it, right?
Right.
I didn't include that. So that's nice, but it's not for this book.
Yes.
And
yeah.
So I've got some other stuff. I'm going, oh, you know, that's nice, but that'll be another book. So I think really, no, I said the overall view, I think, is to be very disciplined, so that in that way, you give yourself the best chance of success.
Yeah. No, definitely. Yeah. Yeah. It does all come down to planning. I've had some books that I've edited where they've kind of gone rambling off somewhere. And I've gone back to the author and said, where is this going? How is this? This might be good for you to get all this out on paper, but this is not actually benefiting the reader in any way. The reader that I've picked up from what I've read of it so far.
Yeah.
So exactly. Know who you're writing for. And then all the way through, you can be thinking, okay, is this relevant? Is this useful? Is this going to connect with them? And if it isn't, then by all means, write it down, but save it in a file for another book.
And then you send the manuscript to the avatar, right? So what people do is they send a book to a copy editor, but it's not necessarily the person that the book is for.
Yeah.
So I sent my book to people like my sister and said, what do you think? Is this useful? Not do you like it? Because that's a different question.
Yes. Yeah.
It's, is this useful? And if they say, well, not really, then I failed, right? So I think one has to bear, and if you're writing a children's book, give it to a child to read and say, did you enjoy it? Not do you like it? Because like is subjective.
Yeah.
You know, is it information? Is it entertainment? Whatever the objective is for the book, you need to give it to the prospective reader.
Yeah.
With all due respect to people like yourself, Alison, you can copy check and so on. But
I always tell authors to send it out to beta readers, to send it to people to people who they think will be reading their book, the person they've aimed it at.
Yeah. And that's the most uncomfortable decision to take, because if they write back and say, frankly, this isn't what I was looking, this isn't useful. But that's the discipline, isn't it? That's what makes it a successful book commercially or not.
And better to have somebody privately come back to you and say, actually, no, you've completely missed the mark on this, than to have them do it in an Amazon review when they've paid money for it and then find that it's not not what it promises to be, or it's not for them.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, it's been really lovely talking to you today. You've mentioned book two a couple of times now, so I guess that's the next stage for you. But are there more books coming after that, do you think?
Yeah, so the idea is I have the podcast, so I have two episodes a week. And so the idea is to create volumes of The Unnoticed Entrepreneur, because they're all different interviews. So it keeps it evergreen, right? Every interview is a fresh thought. And then I'm just going through a litigation, a fairly significant litigation matter. So I'm thinking about writing a litigation survival guide.
Okay, yeah.
That's another one that I have in mind to write on the ups and downs and how to manage the money. If you're bringing a case, how to manage the emotional side, the physical side, because there doesn't seem to be anything out there for, you know, non-legal people on how to survive litigation, not from a legal perspective, but the financial side, the emotional side, the physical side, the mindset side. I've done a lot of work on that. So that's another book that I'm interested to do. And then I wrote a diary, which is purely self-serving, called the Talamanca Trail. I went from North Carolina to Costa Rica overland in 1989 to the FSLN, you know, to the Sandinista Revolution Party.
Oh, right. Yes. Yeah.
Which is, and of course, there's history since then, but I took a diary. So I've actually got a book in, or sort of written with all the photographs of me going through Central America, Belize and Honduras. And that'll just be a, you know, a very dull project for me. But so a few things, and I kept a diary when I started my business in China. So I've got a couple of hundred blog posts from every week when I was in China over 8 years. So so a few other things, but I'm really focusing on, that's what I mean about the first book. You can learn how to write. You can learn how to publish. You know, it doesn't have to be the end game. It can be the beginning. So
definitely.
Alison, thanks for listening to my beginning. And I hope that some of the things I've shared today will help other authors, aspiring and otherwise, to, you know, to move forward and get it done, because it's very rewarding, as you know, and hopefully they come to you for your guidance, of course.
I hope so. But yeah, no, thank you. There are so many, I've made so many notes here, and I'm taking the interview. Yeah. I've got so many notes here of technology to look up. So I think there's some really useful ideas there for people to to maybe turn writing into something more as well, which is, the book is the first step, isn't it? The book is always the first step.
Yeah,
I think.
That's right.
Where can people find you online if they want to connect with you?
Can find me on Linktree. If you know Linktree, I'm just Jim A. James on Linktree. And also they can find me at on LinkedIn, just Jim James, East West Public Relations. Very easy to find me. I'm also on Twitter, Jim A. James.
Fabulous. And of course, they could buy the book, The Unnoticed Entrepreneur, on Amazon and various other booksellers, I guess.
Exactly. The Unnoticed Entrepreneur, please. And also I have the podcast, The Unnoticed Entrepreneur, which is on all the players.
Okay. Thank you, Jim. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you today.
Thank you so much. And I feel I should say hasta luego, but that's Spanish and not Portuguese. How do you say it in Portuguese?
Well, goodbye.
Yes.
Ciao.
Oh, okay. Ciao.
Thank you to Jim James for being my guest on the podcast today. The Unnoticed Entrepreneur is available from Amazon, among other places. And you can listen to his podcast, The Unnoticed Show, on all the podcasting platforms. You can also connect with Jim at Linktree. Just search for Jim A. James. And as usual, all the links are in the show notes. You can find out more about me and the services I offer authors on my website, www.theproofferry.com. You'll also find all the episodes of this podcast there, along with information on how you could be a guest on the show. If you like this podcast, then please subscribe, share it, rate it, tell your friends about it, and review it. This has been a Proof Fairy production, and I'll be back soon with another inspiring interview with another amazing author. Bye for now.